お。
Okay, the next argued case is number 157078, Sovis against McDonald. Ms. Helm.
May it please the court. This is a veteran's appeal, and this is a straightforward case of statutory construction. Now, as this court knows, many veteran's appeals that come before this court are a narrow issue of whether this court has jurisdiction to entertain the appeal because of the relatively narrow scope standard of appeal for veterans' cases. And this is a case that I think we can all agree is one that is interpreting the statute as to the duty to assist a veteran. In this case, the appellant, Robert Sovis, is appealing the 2015 CAVC decision, which was affirming the Board of Veterans Appeals' denial of his claims for benefits for dementia due to ionizing radiation. And this appeal directly raises the question about the scope of the legal obligation imposed on the VA under the statutory duty to assist. Now, the appellee's arguments focus almost exclusively on the issue of jurisdiction, whether his court has jurisdiction to entertain this question. The appellee's arguments that the Federal Circuit repeatedly refuses to hear appeals challenging the fulfillment of the duty to exist ignores the bulk of cases that in which the Federal Circuit exercises jurisdiction, where the Court of Veterans Appeals resolution of the duty to assist turned directly on an interpretation of specific statutory language, as it does here. Now here, the duty to assist, the main statute, 5103A1, imposes a duty to assist a claimant in obtaining evidence necessary to substantiate a claimant's claim. Now, as you know, there's an exception, and the exception is 5103A2. The exception provides if no reasonable possibility exists that such assistance would aid in substantiating the claim.
So which words was the Veterans Court interpreting there?
The Veterans Court was interpreting the if no reasonable possibility exists. And the Veterans Court interpreted those words incorrectly by imposing a requirement that is more strict than that. They imposed a requirement that it must be reasonably helpful. And as we lay out in our brief, having a reasonable possibility that something might substantiate a claim and requiring that something might be reasonably helpful in substantiating that claim are two different things.
So you're saying, Ms. Helm, this represents, in your view, a misinterpretation of the statute.
Exactly. And as to elaborate a little bit on the distinction between those two things, I think it might be helpful to analogize to an evidentiary rule of discoverability versus admissibility. There's no reasonable possibility that something exists, that's more like akin to a discovery standard. Something might be discoverable, but you don't know whether there will be a reasonable possibility. You don't know whether it's going to be admissible, and you don't know whether that potentially discoverable information is going to be helpful, whether it will ultimately be admissible in court. Those things, it was a legal error for the court to interpret that construction to require a reasonably helpful standard. Now, the court, in so doing, it was a short opinion. The Veterans Appeals Court, it was a four-page opinion, and in that case, it relied on one case no less than five times, and particularly cited that case for this interpretation. Now, that case was Hilkert. There's nowhere in that case that uses the reasonably helpful language. And I think part of the error here might have come from the fact that that case was interpreted at a time where there is the requirement that a veteran have a well-pleaded claim, and as we know, that's no longer the law. So it's not the case that the veteran has to show that certain evidence would be reasonably helpful in substantiating their claim such that the claim needs to be well-pleaded. Any case law that discusses that is an apposite here because we no longer have that well-pleaded requirement.
So what if a veteran said, well, I saw a documentary on PBS last year. I think it was on Frontline, and it was talking about the relationship between radiation and dementia. Do you think the duty to assist would kick in and the VA would have to try to sort through PBS's files on the internet for trying to find that documentary on Frontline?
I'm just assuming the facts that
this
you
is
just
a
said,
hypothetical. Yeah,
hypothetically, Judge Chen. No, I don't think, absent further facts that the VA had also discussed it or something else had arisen in a context. No, I don't think that would necessarily raise that requirement. And that sort of goes to what I think is a little bit of a red herring that Appley makes the argument in their brief that we are arguing that this the medical evidence, the medical documents, should have been looked at by the VA and should have been considered in their duty to assist solely because the veteran put them forward. And that's not the argument here. We explain that the veteran did put them forward, put abstracts of the articles forward, and made it clear that they would have been adequately available. But in fact, it was the VA itself that put the issue before the court. And that was when the VA examiner did examine the patient and explained that there is a correlation in the scientific literature between dementia and exposure to radiation, but the medical literature is uncertain enough that one cannot be absolutely clear on this issue.
The board made a fact finding that Mr. Sovis wasn't exposed to radiation during his time of service, right?
I think if
the board made that finding, I'm not saying that that actually is reality, but the board made that finding. Is that right?
Well, what actually the board said, and I think this is a little bit confused by the briefing, the board made the finding that I can look up the exact language. The board made a finding that he wasn't directly exposed, and I believe he says, this is page A174 of the appendix, at best, he had indirect contact with nuclear materials. And what Appley has done here, I think, is conflated the word direct with a direct requirement for having a direct service connection.
I'm looking at A174 to 175, which is pages 7 and 8 of the board decision, and there's a sentence here. It's kind of the wind-up sentence. It says, in light of the foregoing, the board finds that this non-combat veteran's lay statements, when weighed against the other evidence of record, do not support his assertion of being exposed to radiation. So that's, I'm not saying that's right, I'm not saying that's wrong, but just the plain language of that statement sounds pretty definitive.
So to the extent that you're saying that's a factual finding that you don't have jurisdiction to review, I would argue that earlier on, as part of this factual finding, he explains at best he had indirect contact with nuclear materials, and then in explaining how to view the medical articles, says that therefore, altogether, when weighed against the other evidence, did not support an assertion of being exposed to radiation. I think if you, in part, this finding is predicated on a misinterpretation of what the duty to assist requires. And if you say that this comprises an evaluation of whether the duty to assist was fulfilled, and that's a factual determination, then I think every statutory misinterpretation of the duty would be unreviewable before this court, because ultimately, by the time you get to interpreting the statute, there will have been factual findings below. We're not arguing this factual finding on its face on this record. We're arguing that the duty to assist was not interpreted correctly.
I guess I'm just trying to understand what can be done for your client if, in fact, we have an unreviewable finding that kind of breaks the chain on service connection when there's a finding that there's not been any kind of exposure to radiation. So whether or not there is some kind of medical connection between radiation and dementia, I don't know how that ultimately helps Mr. Sovis get veterans benefits.
Well, I think in this case, all this court can do is consider, and all that we're requesting that this court do is consider a remand specifically on a very narrow issue, specifically instructing the VA to get those articles and to examine them.
And then how would that ultimately advance Mr. Sovis's cause when we have a fact finding that there's been no exposure to radiation?
I think they say that exposure was indirect at best, and under a correct duty to assist, if they examine the evidence that they should have examined in the first instance, and that changes anything, then that changes anything below. I don't think the court needs to address those considerations here in order to remand solely on the misinterpretation of the statute. I'm happy to entertain other questions. I also wanted to address and mention briefly that most of the Appley's cases that they cite are distinguishable here on one basic premise. This is not a case where the claimant is acting only in a passive role, and thus explaining the duty to assist does not encompass the duty to prove a claim for such a passive claimant. Appley spends a great number of pages citing the types of cases that I'm sure you're aware of, the Wood v. Derwinski case, the Gage v. McDonald case, that explain the interaction between the veteran and the VA. This is not a one-way street. The veteran doesn't impose upon the VA a boundless search for records that may prove futile if the evidence is not relevant. I don't think any of those cases need to be considered here, and I don't think they're relevant here at all, because this is absolutely not that situation. This has not been a one-way street. This is not a passive claimant. Upon a basic review of the record, the court below issued a supplemental statement of the case describing what the veterans examiner had done. And in direct response to that, Mr. Sovis went out and obtained what he thought they were explicitly asking him to obtain and submitted to that to the VA. The VA then didn't do any of the things that they're required under the statute to inform the veteran that his application was incomplete, to assist him in obtaining the evidence that he had specifically put before them and asked that he obtain. So I don't think adhering to any of that case law is relevant for this very narrow question before the court.
Okay, let's hear from the other side. We'll save your rebuttal time.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Ms. Rose.
May it please the court, I would like to start by briefly addressing the argument on jurisdiction. And I think that the important thing here to remember is that when this court looks at its jurisdictional boundaries, it examines the substance of the issue presented, not a party's characterization of that. So the reason that the government here argued that there was no issue of statutory interpretation raised is that the Veterans Court truly did simply address the argument raised by Mr. Sovis as to whether or not the board had correctly found that the duty to assist had been fulfilled and determined that on the facts of the record, the board did not err in finding the duty to assist.
Ms. Rose, the statute does speak in terms of reasonable possibility, and it is correct that the Veterans Court in its decision referred to reasonably helpful. Now, whatever you say about the strength or the weakness or in between of that argument, it does seem to present a legal question as to whether there was a statutory interpretation that was incorrect.
We don't disagree that questions regarding the scope of the duty to assist are within this court's jurisdiction. However, I think that when we get to the point where it's parsing so finely, we're almost asking the Veterans Court to invoke magic words. You know, it has to track the language of the statute directly.
Well, that would be an argument on the merits, but as it's pitched, doesn't it present a legal argument?
As it's pitched, but again, that goes back to what the court talked about in and it, as it's pitched by Mr. Sovis, if it's characterized as a legal argument, again, here, I don't think that the Veterans Court's decision really supports there was an interpretation in the manner that this court has described, for example, in talking about an elaboration of the statute for example, as was discussed in Forshee. But if the court were to reach the merits, I think that what's clear here is that the correct result would be for this court to affirm the Veterans Court's decision. And I want to talk about that language about reasonably helpful to substantiate a claim, because that's very important language here. There's a distinction between a claim and all of the underlying elements or factors that make up that claim. And here, Mr. Sovis's claim was for a claim for service connection for dementia based on exposure to radiation. And that type of claim, a direct claim for requires both first a finding that the veteran was exposed to radiation, and then only second do you reach the question of whether or not there's a nexus between the found exposure to radiation and the underlying condition. And so here, where the board had found, and it appears that Mr. Sovis's counsel agrees, that the board's finding that there was no exposure to radiation is an unreviewable factual finding, and I don't believe that she challenged that in her briefs. Where the board had found that there was no exposure to radiation, this goes to Judge Chen's question about what then could the VA have really done to assist this claimant. And the simple fact of the matter is that these articles, even if they could help validate a nexus between radiation exposure and dementia.
But there was no dispute in terms of the fact that he was on the ship and that he was bunked adjacent to the cargo. And at that time, I didn't see any establishment that there is no leakage and that there is no area of that one might view as exposure. And I didn't see that the board made a definitive finding that the air in that space was pure and free of any aspect of radiation. Are you saying that they did?
No, however, I think this gets to a more fundamental issue relating to claims based on ionizing radiation, because there is potential for exposure to radiation any time that you're dealing with nuclear material, certainly, but also in other circumstances such as, you know, simply flying, being exposed to the environment.
We're not concerned with other circumstances.
What's that?
We're concerned with these circumstances. The bunk to which he was assigned, where he resided for a good deal of time on the ship, and all the rest of it, I didn't see any scientific finding that there was no radiation leakage or whatever else you might call it in that atmosphere.
Well, a leakage, I think we're now perhaps getting into the difference between indirect exposure anytime that there's nuclear materials and something that causes a release.
No, we're getting into the
materials.
Findings of the board and the completeness, whether there was doubt to be resolved in favor of the veteran, the extent of the additional investigation that the board was required to, or the VA was required to do, when apparently they did not decline even to read the scientific references that he provided by title. The title is significant. The content of two of them perhaps was unknown. No effort by the board to review the state of the science, as far as we could tell from the record.
I would start with that, Your Honor, that last point, because there was an effort made to review the state of the science. That wasn't done by the board directly, but
by... They're supposed to assist the veteran. This is not an adversary proceeding. This is where we're all trying to find out as well as we can what the scientific facts might be, what might be the consequences for those who for one reason or another, might be vulnerable. And it's hard to find in the record that this duty was performed as conscientiously as one might hope.
First of all, when Mr. Sovis made it clear that he was basing his claim not only on asbestos, which is what the VA had originally interpreted the claim to be based on, but on exposure to radiation, the board remanded for a VA examination to examine his claim and do that scientific determination that the court is concerned about. And specifically, that medical examiner in 2012 did review the state of the scientific evidence, and that can be found in the record at 137 to 141. After that examination had been performed, Mr. Sovis submitted these additional abstracts. But to be fair, one abstract does on its face explain that the underlying study found that there was no direct correlation between exposure to radiation and development of dementia in survivors of atomic bombs, like in Hiroshima, and that was at 155. The other...
We're told the record says that the board did not read, refused to obtain the two scientific articles whose caption states a relevancy of some sort. How does that fulfill the duty to assist?
Because the duty to assist, as this court explained in Goals, is not boundless. And here, where there was a predicate element, that is exposure to radiation, and there was, as Judge Chen pointed out, a finding by the board that Mr. Sovis had not established that he was exposed to radiation materials during service, that second element of nexus really isn't reached. The board did address the nexus element, but in its decision, it made it clear that that the first element really could end the discussion. It went on to discuss the nexus, but there's nothing about the nexus element that could substantiate Mr. Sovis's claim, which is what the statute at 5103A requires. It has to be something that can help substantiate the claim. And where there is a factual finding that is not reviewable by this court on the first element, that Mr. Sovis was not exposed to radiation as a result of service, that second piece, even if the state of the evidence, the medical evidence, showed definitively that there could be some connection between dementia and radiation exposure, it would only come into play if there was a finding that Mr. Sovis had been exposed to radiation.
So what's the, in your view, what is the proper disposition of this case? Assume that the court were to find that a legal argument has been presented along the lines that Ms. Helm discussed in her brief and her oral argument, but that at the same time we're faced with a finding that there was no exposure to radiation, both by the board and, again, that finding not disturbed on appeal to the Veterans Court. What do we do in that circumstance if that's the situation? We have a legal argument, jurisdiction for that, but if you're correct, whether that argument stands or falls doesn't make any difference. What do we do in that situation? Do we affirm or do we dismiss or what, in your view?
If there is a legal argument raised, then the court would have jurisdiction, so dismissal would not be appropriate. The correct thing to do would be to affirm. And I would note that it's not a harmless error type argument, because that assumes that there was an error, but it would reflect the court's understanding that here the duty to assist does not require the VA to obtain documents where, like here, there's a claim that requires two elements, and the first element has not been met. Something that can help sustain the second element is not necessary. It's not necessary for the VA to go out and get those documents on nexus if that first element of exposure has not been found. If the court has no further questions, we ask that the appeal be dismissed or affirmed if the court determines it has jurisdiction.
Thank you, Ms. Rose. Ms. Helm.
I just have a couple brief points to respond to. I believe Judge Schall and Judge Chen, seems like you're over. One concern that you have is this factual finding about whether Mr. Sovis had any exposure to radiation or not. And for this, I would point again to the notion that if you cannot challenge a statutory interpretation because of a prior factual finding, then review would be precluded in many instances that I don't believe Congress intended this court to preclude review of the very narrow issue here. It is not the case, I don't believe it is the case, as Appley says, there are two prongs, and if you haven't met the first prong, the second prong is irrelevant. In this case, the first prong in which the factual finding was that at best there was indirect contact to nuclear materials, and then based on a set of reviewing the evidence, the conclusion was that there is probably no exposure to radiation. Here, the statutory error is conflated with the fact that the proper evidence wasn't presented. So if you take this very narrow remand, which we believe is appropriate here, to remand the issue, it's a very relatively light burden the VA would have to review the specific enumerated documents, which no one has argued, and there's no argument in the record here or below that those documents are somehow not attainable, and that that any of the goals law or otherwise kicks in to say that this is, you know, would be a futile search, or this would not be something that could be adequately found by the VA. None of that applies here. There's no dispute they could get these records. If we could remand the case narrowly to look at that, then I believe it's an issue to be presented below on what the evidence then says under a proper interpretation of the statute. And then if any finding doesn't change, well, I believe that's just speculative at this case, and that's not something that we're asking this court to consider.
Any more questions? Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Helm. Ms. Rose, the case is taken under submission. That concludes our argued cases for this morning.